Stan Hieronymus joins me this week to discuss new hop varieties and hop products. This is Beersmith Podcast number 259.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith Podcast number 259, and it's mid-June 2022. Stan Hieronymus joins me this week to discuss new hop varieties and hop products. Thank you to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Every issue of Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine is packed with articles for homebrewers and beer lovers. They offer access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and the amazing Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com to get your subscription today. And also the Brew Commander, the new brewhouse controller from Blickman Engineering. It's available in electric and gas propane models. The patent-pending Brew Commander is a high-quality brewhouse controller that offers automated step mashing, boil timers, precision temperature control, and advanced settings. Command your brew day with the new Brew Commander. To order yours today, go to BlickmanEngineering.com. Again, that's BlickmanEngineering.com. And the web-based version of Beersmith with the new inventory modules available now at BeersmithRecipes.com. Beersmith for the Web lets you build, edit, and brew recipes from any browser, including your desktop, tablet, or your mobile device. The web version gives you access to tens of thousands of recipes, online recipe editing, advanced water tools, and much more. You can try Beersmith Web for 30 days by setting up an account at beersmithrecipes.com. If you have a gold, platinum, or pro license, you get both Beersmith Web and the desktop version for one low price. Check out beersmithrecipes.com now and give Beersmith Web a try. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, I welcome back Stan Hieronymus. Stan is the author of For the Love of Hops and has authored a number of other books, as well as Brewing Local, Brew Like a Monk, Brewing with Wheat. Stan has also penned hundreds of periodicals and is a certified beer judge. Stan, always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Well, thanks for continuing to invite me.
So how are you doing? I understand you've been traveling a little bit lately and probably working on a few hop projects, right?
We feel bold enough, but we went out. Most of the traveling has been for pleasure.
Well, that's nice.
But coming up, just like you, we're recording this right now, but next week I'll be in Pittsburgh all week for the Homebrewers Conference, judging for 3 days and then giving you a couple talks on Friday. Then after that, not too much travel for business until the end of August, going to Ecuador. Then right after that, of course, to get up to the Northwest for hop harvest.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to HomebrewCon in Pittsburgh coming up next week. And I'll have a booth there as well. So looking forward to that. Well, first, you want to mention a few of the new hop varieties that we've been working with. Some of these are starting to work their way into the homebrew supply chain, I think, right?
Right. You know, people get excited about new hop varieties, you know, just because it's new. It's always a new thing. And sometimes you hear about them, I know a lot of homebrewers we're looking at, and we're talking primarily about IPA hops, but I do want to talk about some of the new lager hops as well.
Okay.
And you read about them on the side of a can. I had a brewer recently ask me what kind of hop Incognito is. Incognito isn't a hop variety, of course. It's a form of using hops, one of the new advanced hop products. But you know, you see these things on the side of a can and you think, okay, what's it like on its own? How could I use it? And then you go to look for it. And of course, sometimes it's next to impossible to get your hands on. So, you know, much as when there are so many hops to choose from now, marketing becomes super important.
Right.
And your ability to get the hops in the supply chain. Announced really at the end of 2020, coming into the market in 2021 and 22, you had a new variety from New Zealand, Nectaron, and people were excited to see the idea. New Zealand has a new variety from Australia, Eclipse. And again, the people selling these are thinking these are going to become very popular hops. The idea that New Zealand Hop Cooperative actually expects Nectaron to be their best seller. Overall, Nelson Sauvin is still probably going to be the hop everybody wants. And Eclipse will probably be number three in Australia, even by the next hop harvest, which is, of course, next March, because down under they're a flip from us. And then the other variety, so every even year starting in 2014 or 2012, the hop breeding company has released a new variety. So you had Mosaic, and then you had Equinox in 14, and Laurel in 16, Sabro in 18, and Talus in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And now Talus is showing up in a fair amount of places.
Now, what's Talus? You talked about the other two.
Talus, well, just run it through the other two as well. So you think about Galaxy, which is super fruity hop.
Mm-hmm.
And really pushes the Australians to be able to grow with their infrastructure as much of that hop as there is demand. But it's 58% of their production. And there's a limited window these hops can be picked in and dried. So having stuff that's outside those windows is important. And that's why Eclipse is important. And it is, it has the same fruitiness as Galaxy, but it has more of a spicy element. So you could use it a little bit differently. Nectaron has that stone fruit and almost a peachiness that stands out on its own, but also works well with other big, bold flavors. In the case of Talus is a daughter of Sabro, in which if anybody's brewed with Sabro, you know that it's a coconut bomb. In 2019, I guess it was, shortly before COVID, I was down in Brazil for an extended period of time and at a couple of festivals. And I swear every brewer there was making a pina colada beer with Sabro. It's a big, bold hop, and it really needs to be used in sort of a limited way. Talus is the daughter. And Talus is just a whole lot different. It's got more citrus to it. It's pretty floral. So it gets this real fresh element, kind of like tangerines. Mm-hmm. So just when you bite into them and so on. So Talus is a good, again, hop that works well with others. And so those are kind of the big three, in part because they get distributed well. They've got some sort of pedigree.
So is Talus coming out of Australia, New Zealand as well?
No, Talus is from the Hop Breeding Company, daughter of Sabro. And like I said, the 2020 release. And coming up, they'll be releasing a hop soon. Naming the hop soon. And the thinking is everybody in the industry is pretty sure it's going to be HBC 586, which is more tropical, juicy, a lot of mango, guava, lychee. And it's been around a few years, and it's proven itself. And that's a likely candidate, although HBC has some other hops that brewers are excited about. One's called 630. That's been around for a few years, and that's got more of a candy raspberry aspect, or some people talk it as cherry candy-like. It again is really complementary. Talking to Jason Peralt at the Hop Breeding Company and also Yakima Chief Ranches, the breeder there, as he points out, it's a lovely hop. He's very fond of it, but they have other fruity hops, other hops that might work in that space. So it could just be there, always have a number, but they might continue to grow like 30 acres of it.
Well, let's go back to the original three. So Talus, Nectaron, and Eclipse, are those something you might be able to get at the homebrew level? I know we've talked about this before, but homebrewers are kind of at the end of the supply chain, right?
Well, it's not totally at the end of the supply chain. It's important. I know that home brewers feel like that they're getting the leftover hops, and that's not necessarily true. And later when we talk about some of cryo hops and Lupamax, the concentrated hops, you realize that they can't produce it. You know, those are not being produced. They're not saying, oh, these are not as good a hops and we're going to make pellets out of those. They're making those products out of the best that they have to offer. Now, of course, large breweries do go to Yakima and they select the hop varieties or the particular lots of varieties that they contracted for. So, for instance, you know, Bell's is buying a lot of Centennial. It is what they consider it's the best Centennial for them. That isn't necessarily the best Centennial. They are trying to put out a brand that's the same year after year after year.
Right.
So the idea that's what is best, that's just the point. But when the hops are in short supply, when they're contracted, then those are not going to make it into the homebrew chain.
Right.
And so
that's what Chalice,
is much easier to get. Because it's Yakima cheap hops, and they sell lots of hops to home brewers, and so that they're producing those, and they also tend to make sure that they've got enough acreage in the ground before they release a new variety. So Talus will be easier to get. Another one becoming easier to get for home brewers is Strata. Which has been around a little while. It's out of Oregon, and that's indie hops, you know, financed breeding. So it's the first hop to come out of their breeding program specifically for Oregon hop farmers. And it's got, you know, they spent a lot of time picking a hop. The idea is Oregon farmers want something specific to their region, but it has the characteristics that brewer that are in demand right now. You know, that means it has a lot of passion fruit, and it also has a certain dank quality to it. And again, it's another hop, as brewers have learned to use it, that they recognize that it works really well with other hops. So you can put it with something like Mosaic, you still get the Mosaic quality, and it adds more depth to the blend of hops that you have.
Now, I've had a number of growers come out of the Midwest talking about some of the hops they're offering. What are your thoughts on some of the Midwest hops, the newer ones?
Well, so the new varieties out of the Midwest, like Bergamot, I just haven't had enough beers with those. And, you know, they don't have as much of a track record. But farmers in the Midwest, in New York and Michigan, those are the two biggest, and Wisconsin. They are growing the old school public hops, and some of them are turn out. Chinook is the perfect example. Chinook out of Michigan or New York is very different than Chinook out of Washington State. It's where you get pine out of the Northwest, you get pineapple out of the Midwest. So those are. For people who want to use, if you're in Michigan brewer and you want to use local hops, that's an excellent local hop. And there are a few varieties that people are pretty happy with. But there's a lot of excitement now in Michigan, in New York, every place else in the U.S. for the latest release from the public hop breeding program. And that's a hop called Vista. And it has those dynamic aromas and flavors that it's not Citra, but it has that, those sort of compounds.
Right.
And it has been, you know, vetted nicely. So it grows well in New York and it grows well in Michigan. And because it's a public variety, that means farmers can get their hands on it. You know, you can't grow Citra.
No licensing fees.
For Washington, because of the license. There's a fee, but they also want, you can't even, like, you can't get it at all. whether you were willing to pay the fee or not. You're not going to, because concerns about quality control. And it will be easier for farmers to get. It's more disease resistant. That's super important, obviously, and it's going to just become more important all the time as more restrictions come down on spraying hops, for instance. So if you want to ship your hops to Europe now, it's becoming much more difficult because insecticides you can use in the United States, you can't use in the EU. And that's what one reason that, and it's just the beginning of, there'll be more hops out of the public breeding program because of lobbying the Brewers Association has done to get more funding for that program, and also money that the Brewers Association has backed it up with. And for homebrewers, the plus is that if it's a public hop, that means homebrewers can grow it as well. You know, homebrewers can't grow Citra. Homebrewers will be able to grow Vista.
Right.
Vista is just now, there are probably a few places you can get Vista, but after this harvest, it will be much easier
more
to get.
Widely available.
It'll also be possible to get the rhizomes to grow the hop yourself.
Awesome. Well, I mean, that's an example of some of the other larger varieties that are coming out, at least in limited numbers at the commercial scale. You mentioned Vista. I think you talked about some of the HBC
right.
630, 586. Can you talk a little bit more about some of the other ones that we have to look forward to?
One more HBC. It's called 1019. And it's not as close. You know, it's only been the breeding since like 5-6 years ago. Mm-hmm. But it's just being put in the hands of more farmers in the Northwest to see how it grows for them. I had a beer with it last hop harvest, and it was striking. So it'll be interesting. There will be more of it available for brewers to begin to experiment with this year. The logic would say that it's probably not going to be released before 2026, but maybe it could leap forward to say 2024. And anyway, it's got this, what can really be described as something like a sweet tropical aroma and flavor. It's pretty intense, so you're going to have to figure out how to use it. And I've also seen it, and this, I did not find this in the sample that I tasted, but it's got kind of a rummy flavor. So it's got some unique qualities to it. And that could be one that comes out earlier. And I think, you know, a year from now, when you're looking at that can, because more brewers are putting, you can look at cans right now and you'll see this was made with HBC 586. You're going to see more beers made with HBC 1019. What you're probably not going to see is beers made with HS 17701. That's from Hopsteiner. But it's certainly a hop to be looking for in a few years, maybe. And what makes that interesting, and if we're talking about the future of hops, you know, what might change in things is that it has 60% quote other oils. And that is the compounds within the essential oil are ones that we don't usually track. And that the Big Eight, which you know from when you see a catalog for hops, that includes myrcene, caryophyllene, humulene, and farnesene. Those four, then geraniol, linalool, limonene, and citronella. So when you get something with 62%, other, in this case, it certainly you know, comes across. It's got some juicy fruit aspect and pineapple aroma and flavor to it, that it's just going to be different than the other ones, and that's what we're looking for, is diversity. And additionally, the Hopsteiner program also means that it's going to be a super high yielding hop. And you think about it, plants have to be watered basically the same amount. If that plant yields 3,000 pounds versus one that yields 1,600 pounds. That's much better environmentally. So that's the sort of thing that's another plus to that hop. At a more extreme level, and this isn't real important to home brewers, is Steiner just released a hop called Helios. And Helios is a super high yielder. So it's between 3,400 and 4,000 pounds per acre. And the alpha is up over 20. And that's its strength. It's for people who want alpha. You know, you lose track of the fact that alpha is obviously important to hop farmers because it allows them to diversify what they're growing. And that brewers all around the world just buy it as alpha. They don't care about the aroma. It's going to be turned into CO2 extract. They're going to use it in a beer that you can't even taste the hops. You know, it's going to be a 10 IBU beer, but that doesn't matter. You know, there's a lot of alpha out there. When the alpha is more efficient, that again is better for the environment.
Obviously, yeah, if you get more than an acre, right? Well, significant.
Also, one more thing about Helios. Helios is much more disease resistant, you know, to both downing and powdery mildew. Awesome. It doesn't need to be sprayed as much.
Perhaps more significant for homebrewers are the lupulin powders and pellets coming out, such as cryo hops. Can you first describe what these are and then some of the different forms that are available now in the commercial market and the homebrew market?
So you think back, it's only 5 years ago that Yakima Chief Hops introduced cryo hops. That was not the first powder hop available. Hopsteiner's made it available for more than 20 years. But there were a few brewers using it, and it's not as easy to use in straight powder form, even though that's originally how Yakima Chief was selling it right at the outset. They quickly started making it into pellets. The powder would float on the top. So you got a 10 barrel brew house, you got to get in there and stir it, stuff like that. So getting it into pellet form was very important. And the process is, as the cryo name would imply, it's cryogenics. Since the 80s, hops, there would be T90s, which is actually, when we talk about pellets, we're talking about T90s. The premise is that you're getting almost all of the hop, 90% of the hop. As pelleting has become more efficient, it was even more than 90% of the hop. The downside for brewers using a lot more hops on dry hopping, using a lot more hops overall, is you end up with a lot of vegetal matter in the beer. It can affect the taste of the beer, and what it really affects is your yield, because all that green matter absorbs wort, and it ends up remaining in the kettle, in the hops, in this giant goo, and you don't produce as much beer. So practically speaking, as a business, that's not good for business.
Right.
So the cryo hops and you know, at Yakima Chief, and a lot of the people who work at Yakima Chief are home brewers or sometimes commercial brewers. You know, they like the idea of this concentrated product. They're familiar with another product called T45, and that's been around since the 80s. That takes place in a super cold chamber. If you go to St. Johann in Germany, where they make the T45s, it's this giant freezing room, and that's the way you separate the lupulin from the green matter, and you're able to separate it, and then you concentrate it. T45s can be any kind of concentration. They're called T45s, but they may actually be 33%, they may be 68%. So they do include a little bit of the green matter as well. In the case of these chirogenic hops, is for the most part, they're about half of as a T90. So they're like a T45. They're going to have all the lupulin that you have in the 90 in a very concentrated level. So you only need to use half of the amount that you would use a T90, but you're also going to pay about twice the price.
They're concentrated lupulin glands and so on from right. from the hop, and they cut out
the lupulin gland, which includes the alpha acids and all the essential oil.
And they cut out. I assume they cut out most of the vegetal matter, or at least a lot of it, right?
A lot of it. You don't necessarily want to eliminate all the vegetal matter because their glycosides are in there. Okay. So there are flavor elements for a beer to taste like a beer. You need those things. An example would be what Miller uses: only hop extract, things extracted from hop. That's why Miller has all these patents to add glycosides back into beer, because what they discovered is that, you know, their beer didn't taste like beer anymore. It lacked that kind of crisp snappiness that you get. Mm-hmm. People are always surprised that sometimes, just for fun, get a Miller Lite, get a Bud Light, try the two together, and you'll suddenly say, hey, this Miller Lite has more hops in it. You'll actually notice the hops and the snap. And part of that is because they've gone and added the glycosides back in. But that's kind of an aside. So in these concentrated lupulin products, the Yakima Chief was the first one with pellets, but they've since, you know, what happened is that Hofsteiner had the powder. They recognized that there was interest in lupulin pellets, so now they sell lupulin pellets. Haas has come up with a different product they call Lupamax. So if you're, and again, home brewers don't get to do this, but commercial breweries do, they go select the hops they want. If they are buying enough cryo, they can select the cryo they want, which is probably the same. Let's say that you're buying Mosaic, and mm-hmm. and that you're a large brewery and you're buying thousands of pounds of Mosaic. You're going to try out a bunch of different lots and say, this is a good one. And you could have some of it in pellet form and some of it in cryo form. But in the case of Haas, what they're doing is every lot, which is more than 1,000 lots, during harvest, goes through their sensory panel first. So those are approved lots, and they are also, when they're doing that, they are the panel is already noting particular lots they think will work well in Lupamax, because they want Lupamax to be, if you buy Lupamax Citra this year and then you buy it next year, it will be essentially the same. Not 100% the same, but you don't have to be redoing your recipe if you've got a brand and you're, you know, using those hops. You want that brand to be the same in 2023 and 2024 and so on. So they are making a product that reflects a little bit of harvest, but not nearly as much as you would get otherwise.
So more consistent.
Right. So talking though, it's interesting about that process. And one thing though, they will, every lot that they've noted is good for Lupamax, they still allow people to make selection on it. So that could be selected away from them. We'll say Stan's Brewery comes in and says, I really like this lot, I can get this lot. And that's sort of the flip of the concern of, say, homebrewers, that they are getting a lesser hop. They want to make sure that brewers don't think they're saving the best stuff for Lupamax. So in the course of that discussion, that's when I talked to Phil Chow, who's whatever his title is, but it's an innovations thing. Like, he says that the idea that lesser hops end up in any pellet form at Haas, because they are going to reject hops that their panel doesn't like, is just silly. And in fact, if homebrewers are buying pellets or Lupamax, they can be sure that they're not getting the end of the chain.
I see. Yeah.
So the latest of the cryo products is now from Crosby. They just announced theirs in May. And that means that for the first time, Strata, for instance, is available in the concentrated form. And it's the first time Nelson Sauvin is available, because they work with a farm in New Zealand, obviously, Hop Revolution. So the Hop Revolution cryo products, which they Crosby calls CGX, is available now from the 21 harvest, and the 22 will be available very soon. In addition, meanwhile, YCH, so that they've done, as well as building a larger cryo plant, their research into something they call survivables. I don't know if we talked about survivables.
We did, actually. We have talked about survivables. Although, for some reason, I think YCH pulled their survivable handbook off, which was kind of frustrating, but pulled it off their website. But
I think they're still handing it out at panels, and I think they're doing a presentation at HomebrewCon. And they definitely gave that same presentation at CBC. Well, what they are expanding their cryo line in a variety of ways. So from survivables came what they call CryoPop, mm-hmm. which is they're using the science in behind that, which is trying to take their look at survivables to create what they call CryoPop, which is a special blend. So you're not getting cryo mosaic or cryo cascade, you're getting this blend, and they are starting to put out more blends as well. And I think it's like trial 602 and 603. These probably are not going to end up in the homebrew chain. I wouldn't guess. They just put them in a few brewers' hands, they get the feedback, and they're going, okay, we learned from this, and they're going to build more blends out of that. In addition,
now I think you can get CryoPop at the homebrew level, can't you?
CryoPop, definitely.
Yeah.
So you might have it at the next product like CryoPop, which will go to brewers and then the homebrew chain as well.
Could we step back for a minute and just explain to homebrewers how to best put some of these lupulin products to work in their homebrew?
Well, they're first of all, they are going to get you more yield, because you're not going to use as much mass.
Yeah, I think you mentioned like a two for one kind of deal.
Yeah, I there's really no reason to use them before your roll pool.
Mm-hmm.
But in the case of when you're thinking about survivables, obviously you want to have an interaction between yeast and the compounds in the hops.
So, I mean, you do want to be dry hopping with them as well, not just using the whirlpool.
Yeah, so use them at the end of the whirlpool. So otherwise, those compounds, you boil, and it doesn't make any difference. If essential oil in 10 minutes of boiling will eliminate half the essential oil.
Right.
So heat is not your friend.
No.
So that's you're going to use those at the beginning of fermentation, if you want it at the middle of fermentation, or if you use it at the end, depends how much yeast you have present. At a homebrew level, you've still got a fair amount of yeast, but you want to get the biotransformation that's going to take place. So using them late is the idea. And I would say you don't want to use only those. Like I said, you still want some of the vegetable matter that are in the hops.
So maybe use a little bit of cryo hops along with your regular hops for dry hopping and
different blends. You know what you have available and things like that. So the plus the cryo is you're looking for more pop from the homebrew level. You're not really efficiency. I never worry too much about efficiency. But it is, you can get a more vibrant beer. You're also, the vegetable matter is why you're getting hop creep.
Right.
So cutting back on that solve some of your problems with hop creep as well.
Excellent. So that's how to use your cryo hops, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So one more, these are sort of
fun things, ahead.
Commercial level. So last year, YCH started selling fresh frozen hops. Mm-hmm. And basically, because the Wyckoff farm where they get those also grows a lot of fruit. So they're using that same process where you take fruit and freeze it immediately. So you're getting hops that basically you can get fresh hops. They're frozen. A bit of a problem in the transport. They have to be transported super cold. They have to be used immediately. So now one of their trials is fresh frozen pellets called trial 3, a 301 trial or a trial 301. Again, that's mostly for commercial breweries because you're going to have it overnighted. You got to use it super fast or be able to keep it super cold. But it's kind of a neat addition. And then their latest trial is to do a blend that they think is pretty good. So it's got some citron, mosaic, and things like that. And they are co-pelling it with Phantasm, mm-hmm. which is the powder made from Sauvignon grapes in New Zealand.
Wow.
And when I say Sauvignon Blanc, that's I have a neighbor who teaches French, points out to me that in France it's Sauvignon Blanc. And I would say there's people should recognize the difference. If you have Sauvignon Blanc from Austria, it's a lot different than from New Zealand. New Zealand is really, in the case of Phantasm, they're trying to tie into that giant, bold cattiness that you get in the New Zealand varieties. And what those grape skins have are quite a bit of bound thiols. And of course, everybody's excited about thiols. We've talked about
And I actually, yeah, thiols. I want to, that was the next topic on my list was to discuss thiols. So maybe it's a good transition into that. But I mean, winemakers have known about thiols for quite a long time now, right?
Right. And their early research is what the understanding of thiols in hops has come from. Or you look at 4-MMP, which Citra has a lot of 4-MMP, or 3MH, which Nelson Sauvin has a lot of 3MH. So that, you know, the 4MMP is the one that's more likely to give you a lot of cattiness. And
those are thiols or no? Yeah. Those are thiols, right?
Those are thiols.
Yeah, I thought so.
4MMP, 3MH, and 3MHA. And 3MHA is the one that's going to give you more guava and passion fruit. But the trick is most of the thiols in hops are bound, and mm-hmm. trying to free them is the difficult part. And the thiols in the grape skins are also bound. There are no free thiols in the grape skins. So what the winemakers have done is a combination of their yeast, quite often are GMO yeast, but they also have different processes in the winemaking in order to free those thiols. That doesn't necessarily work in beer. So that's why you've got new yeast strains out there.
So let's, again, first of all, explain why thiols are so important to modern IPAs. I very much like to talk about some of the new yeasts coming out.
Right. So we'll back up a bit and talk about biotransformation because we just noted the importance of a compound like geraniol, which during the fermentation process, geraniol in a combination with linalool and nerol and some other compounds, and some of them are actually related to geraniol, are transformed into fruitier compounds, but not necessarily tropical.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a biotransformation. When they interact with thiols, then you get the impression of tropical, and that's synergy.
Right.
What breweries are looking for now is a different sort of biotransformation that frees bound thiols, or the precursor for thiols, and then that will interact with your earlier biotransformation. Or the yeast can work on 3MH once it's free to create more 3MHA.
So that
so it's a whole combination. So you've got two things. You've got multiple biotransformations, and you've got synergy. And that's what you expect in a modern IPA.
And I assume if we use one of these yeasts that frees up these thiols, we get more fruity flavors in our IPA, right?
That's the idea.
Yeah. So talk for a minute about some of these new examples of thiol-focused yeasts that are coming out.
Well, so there are to do these, and certainly the search is on to find ones that are better at freeing just standard yeast, so mm-hmm. to speak. But what people have done in the process is, oops, somehow I've screwed up my screen, but that's okay.
That's okay. Keep going.
So there too. Berkeley yeast has been a little more aggressive in their willingness to use genetically modified yeast.
Okay.
Which some brewers are not going to want to do, home brewers or otherwise. And additionally, you're not going to be able to sell your beer in Europe. So Berkeley's is called Tropics. And if you use Tropics with, say, a variety that has a fair amount of bound 3H, mm-hmm. 3MH, then you are definitely getting more of that rhubarb and citrus, and you'll notice that. Omega yeast in Chicago is also changing the yeast, but they are using a process called CRISPR. And what they're doing is mostly reordering the process that the way the yeast works. So what you want is an enzyme called beta lyase, and what happens is that's encoded by a gene which is called IRC7.
Okay.
And they're changing where they're taking the IRC7 from another yeast, but not another beer yeast. So that's an important part. And they're inserting it in a different place to change the order that the process happens. Hmm.
Is technically that GMO or not?
Well, CRISPR won a Nobel Prize. And if I was making beer and was selling it to people who were going to be concerned about GMO, the first thing I would tell them is CRISPR won a Nobel Prize. And you can sell your beer in the U.S. Europe is hesitant about CRISPR. And in fact, Omega will not sell their yeast outside of the United States.
Hmm.
That's my easiest answer to say is they're using a process that won a Nobel Prize. So concerns about your health are probably limited. So the first product they did out of that is called Cosmic Punch. Mm-hmm. And that's basically their London 3 or London 4, whatever, a yeast that lots of people use for New England IPAs, and made that so it's bigger and fruitier. They've also done it, and I'm not sure whether it's available now or not, with the lager yeast, and most recently one called Omega Star Party, which is taking Chico yeast and making it so it can free these compounds as well.
Hmm.
So that, you know, that's reordering, and that's the way you're making those things work.
Very cool. Very cool. So those are currently the options, right? The two Omega yeast strains and the Berkeley Tropics, I guess?
Yeah. I think Lalaman might be working on something related, but in their case, they've got one enzyme already called Aromazyme, I think it's called. And, you know, that's what you're looking for. It's actually an enzyme that frees the beta lyase. So that enzyme isn't perfect at it, but when you can add an enzyme to do it, then that would be another option. And I know Lalaman's working on something else as well.
Very cool. Go ahead.
One more thing, just not to interrupt, but it's also important to realize that the hop breeding focus now to move hops forward they are examining the tiles. So you do a cross and come out with hops, and it's in those first years in the field. They're checking the tiles at that level.
I'm sure they are.
The idea is to get the hops to do it on their own.
Okay. Well, I thought I'd just finish with one big question. Can you give us all around tips for making fruity IPAs or New England style IPAs?
Well, look for varieties that are high in monoterpenes, particularly geraniol. And you're seeing that listed more all the time.
So you talk about geraniol, linalool, right? Are the major ones?
Linalool's easier to, you find that in European hops as well as hops of American heritage. But geraniol is a gigantic part of it.
I think you mentioned in the past that thiols are primarily exist in the U.S. hops, right?
Correct.
New Zealand,
Australia. And Australia, because they're
heritage.
The hops they bred with, they can lean on. Citra, which of course was a hop that the Japanese looked at and said, hey, there are these things going on here. And that's when you began your examination of the importance of the monoterpenes and the thiols. And Citra is only 1/8 American heritage. Hmm. So it doesn't take a lot. And why one trait gets passed along and another doesn't. Well, I think
we talked about it before, but the thiols are just a tiny, tiny, tiny portion of the overall oils.
You can perceive a thiol in the amount that's a pinhead in an Olympic-sized swimming pool.
Wow. Yeah.
Those are the two, and then preserving it in the beer. So that's why you're starting it basically at fermentation or maybe the whirlpool to add your hops, because you don't want to lose them earlier. You're going to lose some during fermentation because the CO2 is going to blow them off.
And that goes back to that whole episode we did on survivability, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. Thanks again for coming on, Stan. Maybe give us your closing thoughts on new hop products.
Next time we're going to have to talk about lager hops.
That'd be awesome.
And the beginning change where they're much like the old world hops, but the American palate likes something a little bit fruitier, not Citra. I've had plenty of Citra Pilsners, but something a little bit fruitier edge. So that's again something that breeders are going to begin to supply. And making those interact, and I think the other thing is we'll have to go back and talk about yeast as well. So you've got the right yeast interacting with those.
Well, Stan, thank you so much for being on the show. Really appreciate you being here.
Well, thanks for inviting me, as always.
My guest today was Stan Hieronymus, author of For the Love of Hops, as well as Brewing Local, Brew Like a Monk, and Brewing with Wheat. Thanks again, Stan. Always a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you.
A big thank you to Stan Hieronymus for joining me this week. Thanks also to Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They offer access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and the amazing Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com to get your subscription today. And also The Brew Commander, the new brew house controller from Blickman Engineering. It's available in electric and gas propane models. The patent-pending Brew Commander is a high-quality brew house controller that offers automated step mashing, boil timers, precision temperature control, and advanced settings. Command your brew day with a new Brew Commander. To order yours today, visit BlickmanEngineering.com. Again, that's BlickmanEngineering.com. And the web-based version of Beersmith with a new inventory module is available now at BeersmithRecipes.com. Beersmith for the Web lets you build, edit, and brew recipes from any browser, including your desktop, your tablet, or your mobile device. You can try Beersmith Web for 30 days by setting up an account at BeersmithRecipes.com. If you purchase a Gold, Platinum, or Pro license, you get both Beersmith Web and the desktop version for one low price. Check out BeersmithRecipes.com today to give it a try. I'd like to thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great brewing week.